Today on Wings, wise Caribbean women from two generations tell what the world needs now.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
This is your host, Suki Wessling of The Babblery. On my show, I ask women to share the understanding of humanity that they have developed through their life experiences and work. Today's episode features two women separated by a generation, united in their faith in the promise of post-colonial Caribbean nations. Mia Mottley, Prime Minister of Barbados, addressed the General Assembly of the United Nations on September 27, 2024.
Mr. President, we need a reset, and we need to reset. Those of us here today representing our brothers and our sisters the world over have endured 4 years of polycrises. As the children of Mother Earth, we continue to wrestle with the climate crisis. As a human family, we grapple with the legacy of the pandemic. As a digitally connected people, we are now regrettably confronted by multiple theaters of war and scenes of horror and famine flowing from that war, armed conflict instead of pursued development. Citizens of every country as well, struggling to contain the rising cost of living and the implications for them and their families on a day-to-day basis.
Mia Mottley is known for her deep wisdom and empathy. At 60, her speeches show a wide understanding not only of the past and present politics of Caribbean nations, but also an awareness of the looming problems in their near futures. In 2025, Caribbean feminist author and scholar Dr. Peggy Antrobus turns 90.
I'm interested in Mia Mottley because she's a young woman from the Caribbean who understands a few things. It took me a lifetime to learn, and she understands them at a relatively young age.
Peggy Antrobus has been an important figure in Caribbean feminism since the 1970s, known for her work in the Jamaican government and her leadership in women and development in Barbados, where she still lives today. My conversation with Peggy revolved around Mia Mottley's UN speech, placing the speech in the context of an ongoing critique of colonialism, imperialism, and extractivism.
My background is really in the Caribbean and development, and wanted to contribute some way to Caribbean development. I'm from that generation on the eve of independence, you know? So We're all fired up and wanted to contribute. So this is the reason I chose to reach an economics degree. And I got a scholarship to university, to a British university. I read for economics and because I thought that would help me to contribute. And then I found out that economics degree at a university in Britain did not help me understand Caribbean economies because they're based on a whole different set of theories and assumptions. Don't take account of colonial relations, right? And colonial structures. So that was the first thing I had to unlearn. So starting off with thinking I would be in public finance, finding out I couldn't do that. Going to social work. Anyway, finally, by chance, I was asked to work on women's issues.
More than any other complaint from this podium has been the disparity in treatment and the inability to be able to have fair and transparent treatment for all that would lead to the trust necessary for us to solve the problems of our times that are truly beyond man-made causes. Neocolonialist structures that perpetuate and reflect an old world order characterized by racism and classism and misogyny, while ignoring the legitimate aspirations of billions, will not help to foster the hope or trust that is necessary to meet these polycrises. We must ensure that the global institutions give developing countries, especially small vulnerable states like my own, or vulnerable middle-income countries, seats at the table of decision-making where we can be seen, heard, become active agents in our own cause and lead our own development paradigms.
Peggy Antrobus took part in the first UN World Conference on Women in 1975, which kicked off an entire UN decade for women. She says Mia Motley would have found like-minded thinkers there.
Certainly, she seems as a radical now, and I think she's being dismissed in a way that she would not have been dismissed in the 70s. Because in the 70s, she'd have been one of many radicals. She would not be a lone voice. There's an opportunity for the first time for women from the South to be involved in these meetings under the auspices of the United Nations to focus on our issues. We had a decade to really get to know each other, people from Africa, Asia, the Caribbean, Latin America for the first time, opportunities to meet on a consistent basis around the UN agenda, but which was also our agenda. My interest in Mia Motley, I see her as currently as one of the people who is really trying to be a champion for people from the South who are trying to operate in a world economic system that is not designed to help us build our own socioeconomic development, not designed to help us to build our own place in the world, you know? So in the 70s was a time when a lot of the newly independent countries of Africa and the Caribbean were coming into their own and finding membership in the United Nations. And they found a voice. They had an international platform. And there was a movement, and the movement was speaking with one voice. And all this was, by the way, was against the backdrop of the Cold War. So against this backdrop, and maybe because of it, maybe because of the Cold War, these countries had a very strong voice. Because there was a battle going on between the Soviet Union and the West as to, you know, where would these new voices go? So that was all part of the Cold War and that part of the whole anti-communist thing. And the whole thing about communism and capitalism had nothing to do with us in the South. We got drawn into it. The Grenada Revolution was a victim of that. You know, it's not our struggle. It's not our battle. Our struggle was just to get some justice for our countries, you know, opportunities to build education and healthcare for everybody, literacy, you know, build up agriculture, build up some industries, just to get our countries on some kind of a footing for development, for socioeconomic development. That's what we were about. And then we were finding, in the 70s, we were finding we're up against these structures. So behind that whole call for a new international economic order was actually about trade. Yeah, so in the 70s, there was a movement. A lot of people like Mia, she would not have been standing out as the most radical person because there were a lot of other people like her. Maybe not as eloquent and not as authentic.
We have known difficult battles in mankind's history. But when we were in it, we didn't think we could achieve it. But we did. We abolished slavery. We removed apartheid in South Africa. These battles are not beyond our creativity, our capacity, and our resilience to resolve them.
So going into independence, that whole anti-colonial struggle, everybody understood that. And then somehow in the 1980s, not somehow, you know, with the rise of Reagan and Thatcher, all of that was lost in 1980, 84. In the Caribbean, our leaders all embraced this new so-called Washington consensus. And in doing that, they basically abandoned what they came out of colonialism to do, which is to promote broad-based socioeconomic development, meaning a kind of development that prioritizes or understands that education and health and sanitation and housing are all the foundation for economic growth, in which everybody, every person, a chance to survive and thrive. It sounds like a utopia these days, doesn't it? When I was growing up, it wasn't a utopia. It was achievable. When I was growing up, we really believed it was achievable, you know?
Peggy Antrobus is struck by the fact that, unlike other modern politicians, Mia Motley does not think that achieving the sort of development that she described is a utopian vision. Mia presents such ideas as a necessary goal that must be shared by all nations.
My friends, there must be a commitment to be equal to the current challenges of member states if we are not to perpetuate the discriminatory practices that result in undermining the transformational opportunities that we need. Depriving vulnerable countries from being able to access concessional income that is long enough to build the resilience to save lives and to protect livelihoods is unjust. And that is why we must remain focused. That is why, my friends, we launched yesterday the third iteration of the Bridgetown Initiative, which identifies three key principles, very simply. One, we must change the rules of the international financial system and reform its governance and instruments. Two, we must shockproof vulnerable economies by dealing with debt and liquidity in a comprehensive, development-focused manner. And if we need to give countries a shot of liquidity like we give them a shot of adrenaline to avoid them falling off the cliff of debt, then we must do so. And thirdly, we must augment financing by boosting country capacity to invest in resilience by several means.
Mia Motley's ideas are based on a deep understanding of how and why the Caribbean nations have arrived at their current situation. Peggy Antrobus explains the Bridgetown Initiative in more depth.
So the Bridgetown Initiative really is a very sophisticated way of putting together issues of economy and ecology. And even that is very revolutionary and very advanced and very visionary. Because, you know, the first environmental conference was in the 60s, the Brundtland Conference on the Environment. And at that time, we didn't even talk about the environment. We meaning the women's movement, because I have to remember that I'm coming, my trajectory is through the lens of feminism, right? The women's movement, the global women's movement, which is grounded in the South. So we didn't even talk about ecology. So that Bridgetown Initiative is really visionary in that she understands the link between the climate crisis and the economic crisis and the debt crisis. That's one of Mia's strengths. She sees those linkages between the structures of the ecology and climate change and the economy and debt and political world and power, the world economic order.
It is as if we all truly understand and accept the challenge of rising to solve the major difficulties that are faced by the people of the world and to recognize that global moral strategic leadership requires of us the commitment to redress the wrongs and to take care of saving people and planet. But recognition of the need for the reset, while it is the first step in any issue, what is now also needed is eternal vigilance as our companion, so that as we take the steps to transform attitudes and institutions and rules, we will not succeed overnight. We will not succeed even in the next decade. But if we don't do the reset to change the legacy of centuries of exploitation and domination, we will not be fit for purpose to meet the needs of our people in the third decade of the 21st century.
Peggy Antrobus explains that Mia Motley isn't asking for a surface change, the sort of small gifts of support that the larger powers have doled out since the end of colonialism. Instead, Motley is asking, as she says, for a reset, a whole new system to benefit economies that have suffered by design in the post-World War II financial system.
What it is about the world financial system is it's a world financial system that is created in the aftermath of World War II. The system that we have now, which is collapsing, was created after World War II. And America took a leading role in creating that system. So that was the world created after World War II, and the institutions were institutions like International Monetary Fund, the IMF, which is to make sure that it was possible to deal with issues of debt. Then you had the World Bank to deal with lending money for development, a kind of a international Marshall Plan, supposedly. But again, you see, it doesn't take into account the issue of race and colonialism. At the top of the hierarchy, really doing what the former colonial power, the powerful countries, need to be done. Because the powerful countries understand the need to develop other countries so that those other countries could buy their products. It's kind of, you know, that's the way the system operates. But it's really in the interest of investors. The World Bank is in the interest of the investors. It's just, by the way, countries could benefit also. Hopefully they could, because investors want countries to develop, because investors want airports, roads, houses, factories, you know, access to raw material, ports. It's in the interest of capital that the rest of the world be developed too. I hope I don't sound cynical. I'm just trying to describe the reality from where I stand and from where Mir stands, right? It's basically a world economic order that is based on the colonial powers still in charge.
On Wings, you're listening to excerpts from a speech at the United Nations by Mia Amor-Motley, Prime Minister of the Caribbean Island of Barbados, and commentary by Peggy Antrobus, Caribbean feminist elder. This is host Suki Wessling.
This season of superlatives, with its floods and droughts, its hurricanes and fires, will take the lives and livelihoods of too many. The climate crisis is hitting us almost weekly across the globe. The deniers of the climate crisis, they too need a reset. A reset that will admit of the absolute necessity of collective action by the global community to save our way of life and our planet.
What that system has led to, a few things. First of all, quite apart from the climate crisis, which has led directly to that, because it has facilitated the kind of growth, economic growth. It has facilitated extractivism and the kind of economic growth that has really led to the climate crisis. There's no question about that. But it has also led to increasing inequality and the continuation of dependence. It has led to continuation of the same colonial relations that we were supposed to have ended. And the thing about climate change and these small countries, we're the most vulnerable, because you're talking about our entire country, and it's not just an economy now. It's not just the destruction of a coastline. It's the entire country. We are so small that sea levels could just obliterate us. That's the thing about small island states. So it's an economic order that is not designed for us, but is doing enormous harm. And it is an existential crisis. So what she does is to put together those pieces in the Bridgetown Initiative, which is a visionary idea and incredible.
I asked Peggy Antrobus to address the way that Mia Motley, in that indefinable way of politicians who can bridge divides, seems always to be speaking directly and empathetically with her audience.
First of all, she's very charismatic. You don't realize it, but she is. I mean, people love her in Barbados. Ordinary people, taxi drivers, you know, market women. People really love Mia. And she loves them. So she's really grounded in her own culture, in her own space. I know a bit about her background, and she grew up like that, you know, interacting with ordinary people, even though she's middle class. And, you know, she grows up in the village interacting with people and respecting them, seeing them and hearing them and feeling them. And that's it, Mia. You know, her first campaign, she had a thing called Mia Cares. And she does. She does care in a way that a lot of our leaders don't care. I mean, but she has that quality about her. And she speaks to people at the UN in the same way she speaks to a crowd in Barbados. She does. She talks to ordinary people. And I think the people in Barbados understand her better than the UN, because, quite frankly, I think the Barbadian people are more educated and intelligent than a lot of the people at the UN, who only know what they read in books. But she speaks to people who are, she understands that they're intelligent, and she speaks to them like intelligent people. And I think the way she speaks to the UN is the same thing. She talks to you like that you're just a human being. You're not white or male or the president of the United States. You're just a human being, and she's just a human being. And she's speaking to your humanity. That's what she's trying to do. And she uses very simple language, although she's one of the brightest people I know. You know, she was passing exams at the age of 10 that people at 15 couldn't pass. I'm not saying she's a genius. She's just very, very bright and very well trained. Got some good degrees, you know, but she doesn't brandish them around. You only know that if you're intelligent yourself. You know how intelligent she is. And also you notice that she often brings in Caribbean culture. So she's quoting Bob Marley all the time, you know, or Braithwaite, or, you know, Caribbean writers or musicians. She loves Bob Marley. So she often draws on Bob Marley, which again is a universal language because people all over the world know Bob Marley and can relate to him. So that's the other thing here about her. She's constantly bringing in her culture and the arts. It may not come across at the UN, but she's often in the Caribbean, uses references to cricket, which is our big game. It's the equivalent of your baseball. I don't think she uses too many cricket stuff at the UN, because I think the UN people won't understand.
Talking about cricket and Mia Motley's connection with youth culture led me to wonder about Caribbean youth culture in this time of climate change and upheaval. I pointed out to Peggy that in the US there's been a rise in despair among young people that has led to, amongst other things, disconnection for many youth from electoral politics. I wondered what the issues are there and how Mia is trying to reach young people.
She's always trying to reach them. She's very well aware, and she's close to that generation. And she has a lot of references that she can draw on. Right now, crime in Barbados among young people, young men, it's a big, big problem. Not a lot of opportunities in the Caribbean for young people. In the Caribbean, always, young people have to go overseas, you know? So we have a large diaspora, and it's partly because these islands are just so small, and the opportunities are so limited, you know, so they go overseas. In my day, in my youth, we had something to dream about, you know, which was independence. And I would say, to me, the problem with young people in the Caribbean today is American culture. We are so exposed to it. You know, they are, through social media, they are so exposed to materialism, to consumerism. There's a whole set of problems because, and I haven't heard Mia address this. If I had a chance, I would talk to her about this because I think the time is approaching. It's probably past for us to say, look, we cannot continue along this road of materialism and consumerism. When I was growing up, we still had kerosene lamps and candles and coal pots and no indoor plumbing, you know, so there was a lot of that stuff that was needed. Now people have it and they take it for granted. I remember my son complaining that there was no hot water in the tap when he was an adolescent. And I said, Jared, I didn't know that hot water came out of taps when I was growing up. I didn't even know that. It's so taken for granted now. We didn't have Nike sneakers. Nobody wanted Nike sneakers. We didn't have internet. You know, we used to go to our old movies and watch the old Tarzan movies without realizing that that was part of our brainwashing. We didn't know. I did a course once, not a course, a weekend once on institutionalized racism. And for the first time realized that the things that I grew up with that seemed very benign to me were not so benign after all.
Peggy went on to explain the deep historical connection between the Caribbean and the U.S.
The Caribbean has always had deep roots in America, deep, deep roots. You know, so it's part of our diaspora is there. I mean, we all have family there. I have a daughter, grandchildren, all have family there. So we're so deeply connected. But I don't think that I wouldn't go personally. I'm not even going to go and see my grandchildren right now. Quite apart from the fact that I'm too old to travel, but if I were younger, I would not be going there now. Least of all to migrate. You'd have to be mad to even think about it. I don't know where to go because the crisis in the small island states, there's nowhere to go. Some of the islands have tall enough mountains, you could live on the top of a mountain. But the other thing to think about, which does give me hope, and just remind me right now, is that, I mean, we were once all under the sea, you know. So there's a lot of movement. There are parts of Barbados now that used to be under the water. So maybe we'd go under the water and we'd come back up. I mean, I think you have to take a really long view right now. You have to believe in the resilience of nature. Some people, I'm one of them, who thinks that the only thing that will stop the madness is the climate. Mother Nature. I honestly believe that the only thing that's going to stop this is Mother Nature. So I'm waiting for some kind of cataclysm, you know, cataclysm.
I asked Peggy Antrobus how she thinks that humanity can move forward from this point, and she brought it back to history, and especially the unwritten history of women.
Well, I think we have gotten through it. Again, this is where I'm drawing on my roots now. I mean, my ancestors went through slavery. You know, when you read about that, you wonder how anybody ever survived. How did anybody ever survive that? Well, and now, again, I know how they survived. Women. Women's love. That's it. The historians don't write about that.
Far too many members of the human family call ground is our bed and rock is our pillow. Too many go to bed with their bellies hungry, and too many may not even have a bed. Our reset must therefore collectively build a common agenda that reflects and reinforces our shared humanity. It is that shared humanity that binds us together. Mr. President, you know better than most. Our African brothers and sisters got it right with the principle of Ubuntu, and have used this principle, this General Assembly, to remind us that its simplicity is what we should aspire to. I am because you are. I am because we are. My well-being is tied to yours, and our collective well-being is connected to Mother Earth's.
Thanks to Peggy Antrobus for her delightful and insightful interview, and to Mia Motley for her ethical leadership on the world stage. The recording of Mia Motley is courtesy of the United Nations.
Kiss me your hand, you don't need to understand. Do what I can, no need to stick to the bed. I think I'm dreaming, feeling so.
The song Together by Holly Cook is from the freemusicarchive.org. I'm Suki Wessling of The Babblery, which is produced with support of KSQD Radio in Santa Cruz, California. Learn more at www.babblery.com.
As we start our 40th year of production, Wings thanks all our supporters and contributors, past and present, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. The Wings Sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is Wings.org, the Women's International News Gathering Service.